So welcome everyone. Today is storytelling and we are continuing the story of Mahusadha, the Bodhisattva. And in this birth, as I mentioned before, the perfection which is being developed is the perfection of wisdom. So what we're seeing is a series of trials, tests, problems which the Bodhisattva is faced with and has to solve. And he's able to use his wisdom to solve every problem. I guess it's worth saying that he actually uses quite a many different number of virtues to solve the problems. He uses humility, which is very evident in this birth. He uses patience, he uses generosity and kindness. But most importantly, he uses wisdom. That's the key to his solving all these problems. For those of you who have missed some of the story, again, you can find it on the internet. But it's also not so important that you catch the whole story, because this is an epic that's made up of a series of, as I said, trials or tests and individual stories. And so you can listen to one of them and not need to really know the whole detail about what's going on. Where we left off last time, it was the question of the goddess, where the king banishes, for the first time, I think, he banishes Mahusadha, who is the Bodhisattva. And we'll see that he's gonna banish Mahusadha a few times. It's hilarious, actually, that this king is such a dimwit. And his other advisors are so crazed with jealousy and envy that they keep plotting against the Bodhisattva. It's kind of humorous as to how many times he's actually banished. I think 3 or 4 times. And every time he proves how great he is. So it's interesting that these dimwits are unable to see his greatness and keep banishing or keep trying to destroy him, and he keeps winning without fighting, simply by wisdom and showing them the truth. And it's this is to drive this lesson home, that truth in the end wins out, or beats wisdom in the end is the greatest weapon. So today we're on page 36, on the last paragraph of page 36, starting with again. And he's just answered this question that was put by the goddess, the angel who lived in the king's parasol, because she was angry at the king for banishing Mahusadha. And so she put this question to the king, that only the four questions which only the Bodhisattva could possibly answer. And the king had to bring the Bodhisattva back to answer the questions to avoid being killed by this angel. And this kind of he was able to answer the questions, and that was it. And henceforth great was the glory of the great being. So that here we can see they're going to get jealous and try to have him thrown out again, and succeed, or almost succeed. Again the four ministers said, "This common fellow is waxen greater. What are we to do?" Senaka said to them, "All right, I know a plan. Let us go to the fellow and ask him, to whom is it right to tell a secret? If he says, to no one, we will speak against him to the king and say that he is a traitor." So the four went to the wise man's house and greeted him and said, "Wise sir, we want to ask you a question." "Ask away," said he. Senaka said, "Wise sir, wherein should a man be firmly established?" "In the truth." "That done, what is the next thing to do?" "He must make wealth. "And what next after that?" "He must learn good counsel." "After that, what next?" "He must tell no man his own secret." "Thank you, sir," they said, and went away happy, thinking, "And this day we shall see this fellow's back." Then they entered the king's presence and said to him, "Sire, that fellow Mahusadha is a traitor to you." The king replied, "I do not believe you. He will never be a traitor to me." "Believe it, sire, for it is true. But if you do not believe, then ask him to whom a secret ought be told. If he is no traitor, he will say to so-and-so. But if he is a traitor, he will say, 'A secret should be told to no one. When your desire is fulfilled, then you may speak.'" Then believe us and be suspicious no longer. Accordingly, one day when all were seated together, the king recited, Seneca recited the first stanza of the Wise Man's Question, Book 20. "The five wise men are now together, and a question occurs to me. Listen." This is the king speaking, sorry. "The five wise men are now together, and a question occurs to me. Listen. To whom should a secret be revealed, whether good or bad?" This said, Seneca, thinking to bring the king over to his side, repeated this stanza. "Do thou declare thy mind, O Lord of the earth. Thou art our supporter and bearest our burdens. The five clever men will understand thy wish and pleasure, and will then speak, O Master of men." Then the king, in his human infirmity, recited this stanza. "If a woman be virtuous and faithful, subservient to her husband's wish and will, affectionate, a secret should be told, whether good or bad, to the wife." "Now the king is on my side," thought Seneca, and pleased he repeated a stanza explaining his own course of conduct. "He who protects a sick man in distress, and who is his refuge and support, may reveal to his friend a secret, whether good or bad." Then the king asked Pukusa, "How does it seem to you, Pukusa? To whom should a secret be told?" And Pukusa recited this stanza. "Old or young or betwixt, if a brother be virtuous and trusty, to such a brother a secret may be told, whether good or bad." Next the king asked Gawinda, and he recited this stanza. "When a son is obedient to his father's heart, a true son of lofty wisdom, to that son a secret may be revealed, whether good or bad." And then the king asked Dewinda, who recited this stanza. "O Lord of men, if a mother cherishes her son with loving fondness, to his mother he may reveal a secret, whether good or bad." After asking them, the king asked, "How do you look upon it, wise sir?" to Mahosata. And Mahosata recited this stanza. "Good is the secrecy of a secret. The revealing of a secret is not to be praised. The clever man should keep it to himself whilst it is not accomplished. But after it is done, he may speak when he will." When the sage had said this, the king was displeased. The king looked at Seneca, and Seneca looked at the king. This the bodhisattva saw and recognized the fact that these four had once before slandered him to the king, and that this question must have been put to test him. Now, whilst they were talking, the sun had set and lamps had been lit. "Hard are the ways of kings," thought he. "What will happen, no one can tell. I must depart with speed." So he rose from his seat and greeted the king and went away thinking, "Of these four, one said it should be told to a friend, one to a brother, one to a son, one to a mother. They must have done or seen something. Or I think they have heard others tell what they have seen. Well, well, we shall find out today." Such was his thought. Now in other days, these four, on coming out of the palace, used to sit on a trough at the palace door and talk of their plans before going home. So the sage thought that if he should hide beneath that trough, he might learn their secrets. Lifting the trough accordingly, he caused a rug to be spread beneath it and crept in, giving directions to his men to fetch him when the four wise men had gone away after their talk. The men promised and departed. Meanwhile, Seneca was saying to the king, "Sire, you do not believe us. Now what do you think?" The king accepted the word of these breed baits without investigation and asked in terror, "What are we to do now, wise Seneca?" "Sire, without delay, without a word to anyone, he must be killed." "O Seneca, no one cares for my interests but you. Take your friends with you and wait at the door, and in the morning when the fellow comes to wait upon me, cleave his head with a sword." So saying, he gave them his own precious sword. Very good, my lord, fear nothing, we will kill him. They went out, saying, We have seen the back of our enemy, and sat down on the trough. Then Seneca said, Friends, who shall strike the fellow? The other said, You, our teacher, laying the task on him. Then Seneca said, You said, friends, that a secret ought to be told to such and such a person. Was it something you had done, or seen, or heard? Never mind that, teacher. When you said that a teacher might be told to a friend, was that something which you had done? What does that matter to you? He asked. Oh, pray tell us, teacher, they repeated. He said, If the king to come to know this secret, my life would be forfeit. Oh, do not fear, teacher. There's no one here to betray your secret. Tell us, teacher. Then, tapping upon the trough, Seneca said, Oh, what if that clodhopper is under this? Oh, teacher, the fellow in all his glory would not creep into such a place as this. He must be intoxicated with his prosperity. Come, tell us. Seneca told his secret and said, Do you know such and such a harlot in the city? Yes, teacher. Is she now to be seen? No, teacher. In the sal grove I lay with her, and afterwards killed her to get her ornaments, which I tied up in a bundle and took to my house, and hung up on an elephant's tusk in such a room of such a story. But use them I cannot until it has blown over. This crime I have disclosed to a friend, and he has not told a soul, and that is why I said a secret may be told to a friend. The sage heard this secret of Seneca's and bore it in mind. Then Pukusa told his secret. On my thigh is a spot of leprosy. In the morning my young brother washes it, puts a salve on it, and a bandage, and never tells a soul. When the king's heart is soft, he cries, Come here, Pukusa. And he often lays his head on my thigh. But if he knew, he would kill me. No one knows this except my younger brother, and that is why I said, A secret may be told to a brother. Kawinda told his secret. As for me, in the dark fortnight on the fast day, a goblin named Naradeva takes possession of me, and I bark like a mad dog. I told my son of this, and he, when he sees me to be possessed, fastens me up indoors, and then he leaves me, shutting the door. And to hide my noise, he gathers a party of people. That is why I said a secret may be told to a son. Then they all three asked Devinda, and he told his secret. I am inspector of the king's jewels. I stole a wonderful lucky gem, the gift of Sakka, to King Kusa, and gave it to my mother. When I go to court, she hands it to me, and without a word to anyone. And by reason of that gem, I am pervaded with the spirit of good fortune when I enter the palace. The king speaks to me first before any of you, and gives me each day to spend 8 rupees, or 16, or 32, or 64. If the king knew of my having that gem concealed, I'm a dead man. That is why I said that a secret might be told to a mother. The great being took careful note of all their secrets, but they, after disclosing their secrets, as if they had ripped out their bellies and let the entrails out, rose up from the seat and departed, saying, Be sure to come early and we will kill the churl. When they were gone, the sage's men came and turned up the trough and took the great being home. He washed and dressed and ate, and knowing that his sister, Queen Undumbari, would that day send him a message from the palace, he placed a trusty man on the lookout, bidding him send in at once anyone coming from the palace. Then he lay down on his bed. At that time the king also was lying upon his bed and remembering the virtue of the sage. The sage Mahosada has served me since he was 7 years old and never done me wrong. When the goddess asked me her questions, but for the sage I had been a dead man. To accept the words of revengeful enemies, to give them a sword and bid them slay a peerless sage, this I ought never to have done. After tomorrow I shall see him no more. He grieved, sweat pouring from his body, possessed with grief. His heart had no peace. Queen Udumbari, who was with him on his couch, seeing him in this frame, asked, Have I done any offense against you, or has any other thing caused grief to my lord? And she repeated this stanza. Why art thou perplexed, O king? We hear not the voice of the lord of men. What dost thou ponder thus downcast? There is no offense from me, my lord. Then the king repeated a stanza. They said the wise Mahosada must be slain, and condemned by me to death is the most wise one. As I think on this, I am downcast. There is no fault in thee, my queen. When she heard this, grief crushed her like a rock for the great being. And she thought, I know a plan to console the king. When he goes to sleep, I will send a message to my brother. Then she said to him, Sire, it is your doing that the churl's son was raised to great power. You made him commander-in-chief. Now they say he has become your enemy. No enemy is insignificant. Killed be he must be, so do not grieve. Thus she consoled the king. His grief waned, and he fell asleep. Then uprose the queen and went to the chamber and wrote a letter to this effect. Mahosada, the four wise men have slandered you. The king is angry, and tomorrow has commanded that you be slain in the gate. Do not come to the palace tomorrow morning, or if you do come, come with power to hold the city in your hand. She put the letter within a sweetmeat, and tied it up with a thread, and put it in a new jar, perfumed it, sealed it up, and gave it to a handmaid, saying, Take this sweetmeat and give it to my brother. The handmaid did so. You must not wonder how she got out in the night, for the king had erewhiles given this boon to the queen, and therefore, no one hindered to her. This is referring to the boon given by the king to Queen Udumbari for the Bodhisattva having saved her life. The Bodhisattva received the present and dismissed the woman, who returned and reported that she had delivered it. Then the queen went and lay down by the king. The Bodhisattva opened the sweetmeat and read the letter and understood it, and after deliberating what should be done, went to rest. Early in the morning, the four other wise men, sword in hand, stood by the gate, but not seeing the sage, they became downcast and went into the king. Well, said he, is the clodhopper dead? They replied, We have not seen him, sire. And the great being at sunrise got the whole city into his power, set guards here and there, and in a chariot with a great host of men and great magnificence came to the palace gates. The king stood looking out of an open window. Then the great being got down from his chariot and saluted him, and the king thought, If he were my enemy, he would not salute me. Then the king sent for him and sat upon his throne. The great being came in and sat on one side. The four wise men also sat down there. Then the king made as if he knew nothing and said, My son, yesterday you left us, and now you come again. Why do you treat me thus negligently? And he repeated this stanza. At evening you went, now you come. What have you heard? What doth your mind fear? Who commanded you, O most wise? Come, we are listening for the word. Tell me. The great being replied, Sire, you listened to the four wise men and commanded my death. That is why I did not come. And reproaching him, repeated this stanza. The wise Mahosada must be slain. If you told this last night secretly to your wife, your secret was disclosed, and I heard it. When the king heard this, he looked angrily at his wife, thinking that she must have sent word of it on the instant. Observing this, the great being said, Why are you angry with the queen, my lord? I know all the past, present, and future. Suppose the queen did tell you in secret. Who told me the secret of Master Senaka, Pukusa, and the rest of them? But I know all their secrets. And he told Senaka's secret in this stanza. The sinful and wicked deed which Senaka did in the sal grove, he told a friend in secret. That secret has been disclosed, and I have heard it. Looking at Senaka, the king asked, Is it true? Sire, it is true, he replied, and the king ordered him to be cast into prison. Then the sage told Pukusa's secret in this stanza. In the man Pukusa, O king of men, there is a disease unfit for a king's touching. He told it in the secret to his brother. That secret has been disclosed, and I have heard it. The king, looking upon him, asked, Is it true? Yes, my lord, said he, and the king sent him also into prison. Then the sage told Kavinda's secret in this stanza. Diseased is yon man of evil nature, possessed of Naradeva. He told it in secret to his son. This secret has been disclosed, and I have heard it. Is it true, Kavinda? The king asked. And he answered, It is true. Then the king sent him also to prison. The sage now told Davinda's secret in this stanza. the noble and precious gem of 8 faceta, which Sakka gave to your grandfather. That is now in Devinda's hands, and he told it to his mother in secret. That secret has now been disclosed, and I have heard it. Is it true, Devinda? The king asked. And Devinda answered, it is true. So the king sent him also to prison. Thus they who had plotted to slay the Bodhisattva were all in bonds together, and the Bodhisattva said, this is why I say a man should tell his secret to no one. Those who said that a secret ought to be told have all come to utter ruin. And he recited these stanzas, proclaiming a higher doctrine. The secrecy of a secret is always good, nor is it well to divulge a secret. When a thing is not accomplished, the wise man should keep it to himself. When he has accomplished his aim, let him speak as he will. One should not disclose a secret thing, but should guard it like a treasure. For a secret thing is not well revealed by the prudent. Not to a woman would the wise man tell a secret, not to a foe, nor to one who can be enticed by self-interest, nor for affection's sake. He who discloses a secret thing unknown through fear of broken confidence must endure to be the other's slave. As many as are those who know a man's secret, so many are his anxieties. Therefore, one should not disclose a secret. Go apart to tell a secret by day, by night in a soft whisper. For listeners hear the words, therefore the words soon come out. When the king heard the great being speak, he was angry, and thought he, these men, traitors themselves to the king, make out that the wise man is traitor to me. Then he said, go drive them out of the town and impale them or cleave their heads. So they bound their hands behind them at every street corner, gave them 100 blows. But as they were dragged along, the sage said, my lord, these are your ancient ministers. Pardon them their faults. The king consented and gave them all to be Mahusada's slaves. Mahusada set them free at once. Then the king said, well, they shall not live in my dominion, and ordered that they should be banished. But the sage begged him to pardon their blind folly and appeased him, and persuaded him to restore their positions. The king was much pleased with the sage. If this were his tender mercy towards his foes, what must it be to others? Thenceforward, the four wise men, like snakes with their teeth drawn and their poison gone, could not find a word to say, we are told. Here endeth the story, the question of the 5 wise men, and likewise the story of calumny. After this time, he used to instruct the king in things temporal and spiritual, and he thought, I am indeed the king's white parasol. It is I who manage the kingdom. Vigilant I must therefore be. He caused a great rampart to be built for the city. Along the rampart were watchtowers at the gates, and between the watchtowers he dug 3 moats, a water moat, a mud moat, and a dry moat. Within the city he caused all the old houses to be restored. Large banks were dug and made reservoirs for water. All the storehouses were filled with corn. All the confidential priests had to bring down from the Himavat mud and edible lily seeds. The water conduits were cleaned out, and the old houses outside were also restored. This was done as a defense against future dangers. Merchants who came from one place or another were asked whence they came, and on their replying they were asked what their king liked. When this was told, they were kindly treated before they went away. Then he sent for 101 soldiers and said to them, my men, take these gifts to the 101 royal cities and give them to their several kings to please them. Live there in their service, listen to their actions and plans, and send me word. I will care for your wives and children. And he sent with them earrings for some and golden slippers for others and golden necklets for others with letters engraved upon them, which he appointed to reveal themselves when it should suit his purpose. The men went this way and that, and gave these gifts to the kings, saying that they were come to live in their service. When asked whence they came, they told the names of other places than that from which they had really come. Their offer accepted, they remained there in attendance and made themselves to be trusted. Now in the kingdom of Ekabala was a king named Sankapala, who was collecting arms and assembling an army. The man who had come to him sent a message to the sage, saying, This is the news here, but what he intends I know not. Send and find out the truth of the matter. Then the great being called a parrot and said, Friend, go and find out what King Sankabala is doing at Ekabala. Then travel all over India, and bring me the news. He fed it with honey and grains and gave it sweet water to drink, anointed the joints and the wings with oil 100,000 times refined, stood by the eastern window and let it go. In these ancient times, it seems, animals had the power to speak. The parrot went to the man aforesaid and found out the truth. As he passed back through India, he came to Uttarapanchala city in the kingdom of Kampila. There was reigning a king named Julani Brahmadatta, who had for spiritual and temporal advisor a Brahmin Gewatta, wise and learned. The Brahmin one morning awoke at dawn, and looking by the light of the lamp upon his magnificent chamber, as he regarded its splendor, thought, To whom does this splendor belong? To no one but to Julani Brahmadatta. A king who gives splendor like this ought to be the chief king in all India, and I will be his chaplain in chief. And so, early in the morning, he went to the king, and when he had inquired whether the king had slept well, he said, My lord, there is something I wish to say.
Say on, teacher,
the king replied.
My lord, a secret cannot be told in the town. Let us go into the park.
Very well, teacher, the king said, and went to the park with him, and left the retinue without, and set a guard, and entered the park with the Brahmin, and sat down upon the royal seat. The parrot, seeing this, thought that there must be something afoot. Today I shall hear something which must be sent to my wise master. So he flew into the park, and perched amid the leaves of the royal salad tree. The king said, Speak on, teacher. Gewatta said, Sire, bend your ear this way. This is a plan for 4 years only. If, sire, you will do what I advise, I will make you chief king in all India. The king heard him greedily and answered, Well pleased, tell me, my teacher, and I will do it. My lord, let us raise an army and first besiege a small city. Then I will enter the city by a postern gate and will say to the king, Sire, there is no use in your fighting. Just be our man. Your kingdom you may keep. But if you fight with our mighty force, you will be utterly conquered. If he does what I advise, we will receive him. If not, we will fight and kill him. And with two armies, go and take another city, and then another, and in this way we shall gain dominion over all India and drink the cup of victory. Then we will bring the 101 kings to our city and make a drinking booth in the park and seat them there and provide them with poisoned liquor, and so kill them all and cast them into the Ganges. Thus we will get the 101 royal capitals into our hands, and you will become chief king of all India.
Very well, my teacher, said he, I will do so.
Sire, this plan is for 4 years only. No one else must know of it. Make no delay, but set forth at once. The king was pleased with this advice and resolved to do so. The parrot, that had overheard all their conversation, let fall on Gewatta's head a lump of dung as though it dropped from a twig.
"What's that?" cried he, looking upwards with mouth gaping wide.
Whereupon the bird dropped another into his mouth and flew off crying, "Cree, cree, O Gewatta, you think your plan is for 4 years only? But now it is for six. By and by it will be for 8 years and for hundreds of them."
Catch him," they cried, but swift as the wind he flew to Mithila, and entered the wise man's house.
Now the parrot's custom was this: if news from any place was for the sage's ear alone, he would perch on his shoulder. If Queen Amara was also to hear it, he perched on his lap. If the company might hear it, upon the ground. This time he perched on the soldier, and at that sign the company retired, knowing it was to be secret. The sage took him up to the top story and asked him, "Well, my dear, what have you seen? What have you heard?" He said, "My lord, in no other king of all India have I seen any danger, but only Gewatta, chaplain to Julani Brahmadatta, in the city of Uttarapanchala, took his king into the park and told him a plan for their 4 years. I was sitting amidst the branches and dropped a ball of dung in his mouth, and here I am." Then he told the sage all he had seen and heard.
"Did the king agree to it?" asked he.
"Yes, he did," said the parrot. So the sage tended the bird as was fitting and put him in his golden cage strewn with soft rugs. He thought to himself, Gewatta, methinks, does not know that I am the wise Mahosata.
I will not allow him to accomplish this plan." Then he removed outside all the poor people who lived in the city, and he brought from all the kingdom, the countryside, and the suburb villages, and settled within the city the rich families of the powerful, and he gathered great quantities of corn. And Chulani Brahmadatta did as Kevata proposed. He went with his army and laid siege to a city. Kevata, as he had suggested, went into the city and explained matters to the king and won him over. Then, joining the two armies, Chulani Brahmadatta followed Kevata's advice and went on to another kingdom, until he had brought all the kings of India under his power except King Videha. The men provided by the Bodhisattva kept on sending him messages today to say, "Brahmadatta has taken such and such towns, be on your guard." To which he replied, "I am on my guard here. Be watchful yourselves without remissness." In 7 years and 7 months and 7 days, Brahmadatta gained possession of all India except Videha. Then he said to Kevata, "Teacher, let us seize the empire of Videha at Mithila." "Sire," he said, "we shall never be able to get possession of the city where wise Mahosata lives. He is full of this sort of skill, very clever in device." Then he expatiated on the virtues of the great being, as though he drew it on the disk of the moon. Now he was himself very skillful in device, so he said, "The kingdom of Mithila is very small, and the dominion of all India is enough for us." Thus he consoled the king. But the other princes said, "No, we will take the kingdom of Mithila and drink the cup of victory." Kevata would have stayed them, saying, "What good will it be to take Videha's kingdom? That king is our man anyway. Come back." Such was his counsel. They listened to him and turned back. The great being sent him word that Brahmadatta, with 101 kings on his way to Mithila, had turned back and went to his own city. He sent word in answer that they were to observe what he did. Now Brahmadatta deliberated with Kevata what was next to do. Hoping to drink the cup of victory, they adorned the park and told the servants to set out wine in thousands of jars, to prepare fish and flesh of all sorts. This news also the sage's men sent to him. Now they did not know of the plan to poison the kings, but the great being knew of it from what the parrot had told him. He sent a message to them accordingly, that they should inform him of the day fixed for the festival, and they did so. Then Mahosata thought, "It is not right that so many kings should be killed while a wise man like myself lives. I will help them." He sent for 10,000 warriors, his birth fellows, and said, "Friends, on such a day Chulani Brahmadatta, they tell me, wishes to adorn his park and to drink wine with the 101 kings. Go ye thither, and before anyone else sits in their seats, provided for the kings, take possession of the seat of honor next to Chulani Brahmadatta, saying, 'This is for our king.' When they ask whose men you are, you tell them King Videha's. They will make a great outcry and say, 'What, for 7 years and 7 months and 7 days we have been conquering kingdoms, and not once did we see your King Videha. What king is he? Go find him a seat at the end.' You must then squabble and say, 'Except Brahmadatta, no king is above our king. If we cannot even get a seat for our king, we will not let you eat or drink now.' So shouting and jumping about, terrify them with the noise, break all the pots with your great clubs, scatter the food and make it unfit to eat, rush among the crowd at the top of your speed, and make it din like the titans invading the city of the gods, calling aloud, 'We are the wise Mahosata's men of Mithila city, catch us if you can.' Thus show them who you are, that you are there, and then return to me." They promised to obey and took their leave, and armed with the 5 weapons set off. They entered the decorated park like Nandana Grove and beheld all its magnificent array, the seats placed for the 101 kings, the white parasols outspread, and all the rest. They did all as directed by the great being, and after causing confusion amongst the crowd, they returned to Mithila. The king's men told him what had happened. Brahmadatta was angry that such a fine plan to poison the princes had failed, whilst the princes were angry because they had been deprived of the cup of victory, and the soldiers were angry because they had lost the chance of free drink. So Brahmadatta said to the princes, "Come, friends, let us go to Mithila and cut off King Videha's head with the sword and trample it underfoot, and then come back and drink the cup of victory. Go tell your armies to get them ready." Then going apart with Kevata, he told him about it, saying, See, we shall capture the enemy who has threatened this fine plan with 101 princes and the 18 complete armies. We shall assail that town. Come, my teacher." But the Brahmin was wise enough to know that they could never capture the sage Mahosada, but all they would get would be disgrace. The king must be dissuaded. So he said, "Sire, this king of Vaidya has no strength. The management is in the hands of the sage Mahosada, and he is very powerful. Guarded by him as a lion guards his den, Mithila can be taken by none. We shall only be disgraced. Do not think of going." But the king, mad with the soldier's pride and the intoxication of empire, cried out, "What will he do?" and departed with 101 princes and the 18 complete armies. Kevata, unable to persuade him to take his advice and thinking that it was of no use to thwart him, went with him. But those warriors came to Mithila in one night and told the sage all that had passed. And the men whom he had before sent into service sent him word that Julani Brahmadatta was on his way with 101 kings to take King Videha. He must be vigilant. The messages came one after another. "Today he is in such and such a place. Today in such a place. Today he will reach the city." On hearing this, the great being redoubled his care. And King Videha heard it noised about on all sides that Brahmadatta was on his way to take the city. Now Brahmadatta in the early evening surrounded the city by the light of 100,000 torches. He girdled it with fences of elephants and chariots and of horses, and at regular intervals placed a mass of soldiers. There stood the men, shouting, snapping their fingers, roaring, dancing, crying aloud. With the light of the torches and the sheen of the armor, the whole city of Mithila in its 7 leagues was one blaze of light. The noise of elephants and horses, of chariots and men, made the very earth crack. The 4 wise men, hearing the waves of sound and not knowing what it should be, went to the king and said, "Sire, there is a great din and we know not what it is. Will the king inquire?" Hereat the king thought, "No doubt Brahmadatta is come, and he opened a window and looked out. When he saw that he was indeed come, the king was dismayed and said to them, "We are dead men. Oh, tomorrow he will kill us all, doubtless." So they sat talking together. But when the great being saw that he had come, fearless as a lion, he set guards in all the city and then went up into the palace to encourage the king. Greeting the king, he stood on one side. The king was encouraged to see him and thought, "There is no one who can save me from this trouble except the wise Mahosada." And he addressed him as follows: "Brahmadatta of Panchala has come with all his hosts. This army of Panchala is infinite, O Mahosada. Men with burdens on their backs, foot soldiers, men skillful in fight, men ready to destroy, a great din, the noise of drums and conches. Here is all skill in the use of steel weapons. Here are the banners and knights in mail, accomplished warriors and heroes. 10 sages are here, profound in wisdom, secret in stratagem, and 11th, the mother of the king, encouraging the host of the Panchala. Here are 101 warrior princes in attendance, their kingdoms reft from them, terror-stricken and overcome by the men of Panchala. What they profess that they do for the king, will they kneel, they speak, fair they must. With Panchala they go perforce, being in his power. Mithila, the royal city, is surrounded by this host, arrayed with 3 intervals, digging about it on all sides. It is surrounded, as it were, by stars on all sides. Think, Mahosada, how shall deliverance come?" When the great being heard this, he thought, "This king is terribly in fear of his life. The sick man's refuge is the physician, the hungry man's his food, and drink the thirsty man's, but I and I alone am the king's refuge. I will console him." Then, like a lion roaring upon the vermilion uplands, he cried, "Fear not, sire, but enjoy your royal power. As I would scare a crow with a clod or a monkey with a bow, I will scatter that mighty host and leave them not so much as a waistcloth of their own." And he recited this stanza: "Stretch out your feet, eat, and be merry. Brahmadatta shall leave the host of Panchala and flee away." After encouraging the king, the wise man came out and caused the drums of festival to beat about the city with a proclamation:
O ye, have no fear. Procure garlands, scents, and perfumes, food and drink, and keep 7 days' holiday. Let the people stay where they will, drink deep, sing and dance and make merry, shout and cheer and snap their fingers. All will be at my cost. I am the wise Mahusada, behold my power. Thus he encouraged the townsfolk. They did so, and those without heard the sound of singing and music. Men came in by the postern gate. Now it was not their way to arrest strangers at sight except a foe, so the access was not closed. These men therefore saw the people taken up with merrymaking. And Chulani Brahmadatta heard the noise in the town and said to his courtier, Look ye, we have encompassed this city with 18 great hosts, and the people show neither fear nor anxiety, but full of delight and happiness. They snap their fingers, they make merry, they leap and sing. What is the meaning of this? Then the men sent aforetime to foreign service spoke falsely as follows. My lord, we entered the city by the postern on some business, and seeing the people all taken up in merrymaking, we asked, Why are you so careless when all the kings of India are here beseeching your city? And they replied, When our king was a boy, he had a wish to hold festival when all the kings of India should have besieged the city, and now that wish is fulfilled. Therefore he sent round a proclamation, and himself keeps festival in the palace. This made the king angry, and he sent out a division of his army with these orders. Disperse all about the city, fill up the trenches, break down the walls, raise the gate towers. Enter the city, use the people's heads like pumpkins cast on a cart, and bring me here the head of King Videha. Then the mighty warriors, armed with all manner of weapons, marched up to the gate, assisted by the sage's men with red-hot missiles, showers of mud and stones thrown upon them. When they were in the ditch, attempting to destroy the wall, the men in the gate towers dealt havoc with arrows, javelins, and spears. The sage's men mocked and jeered at the men of Brahmadatta, with gestures and signs of the hand, crying, If you can't take us, have a bite or a sup, do! And holding out bowls of toddy and skewers with meat or fish, which they ate and drank themselves and promenaded the walls. The others, quite unsuccessful, returned to Chulani Brahmadatta and said, My lord, no one but a magician could get in. The king waited 4 or 5 days, not seeing how to take what he wanted to take. Then he asked Kewatta, Teacher, take the city, we cannot. Not a man can get near it. What's to be done? Never mind, your majesty. The city gets water from outside. We will cut off the water and so take it. They will be worn out for want of water and will open the gates. That is a plan, said the king. After that, they hindered the people from getting near the water. The wise man's spies wrote on a leaf and fastened it on an arrow and so sent word to him. Now he had already given orders that whosoever sees a leaf fastened upon an arrow was to bring it to him. A man saw this and took it to the sage, who read the message. He knows not that I am the king. I am the sage Mahusada, he thought. Procuring bamboo poles 60 cubits long, he had them split in two, the knots removed, and then joined again, covered over with leather and smeared with mud. He then sent for the soil and lily seed brought from Himavant by the hermits. He planted the seeds in the mud by the edge of the tank, and placed the bamboo over it and filled it with water. In one night it grew up and flowered, rising a fathom above the top of the bamboo. Then he pulled it up and gave it to his men with orders to take it to Brahmadatta. They rolled up the stalk and threw it over the wall, crying out, Ho, servants of Brahmadatta, don't starve for want of food. Here you are, wear the flower and fill your bellies with the stalk. One of the wise men's spies picked it up and brought it to the king and said, See, your majesty, the stalk of this lily never was so long a stalk seen before. Measure it, said the king. They measured it and made it out to be 80 fathoms instead of 60. The king asked, Where did that grow? One replied with a made-up tale, One day, my lord, being thirsty for a little toddy, I went into the city by the postern and I saw the great tanks made for the people to play in. There was a number of people in a boat plucking flowers. That was where this grew, by the edge of the tank, but those which grew in the deep water could be 100 cubits high. Hearing this, the king said to Kewatta, Teacher, we cannot take them by cutting off the water. Make an end to that attempt. Well, said he, then we will take them by cutting off their food. The city gets its food from outside. Very good, teacher. The sage learnt this as before and thought, He does not know that I am the sage Mahusada.
Along the ramparts he laid mud, and there he planted rice. Now the wishes of the bodhisattvas always do succeed. In one night the rice sprang up and showed over the top of the rampart. This Brahmadatta saw and asked, "Friend, what is that which shows green above the rampart?" A scout of the sages replied, as though catching the words from the king's lips, "My lord, Mahosada, the farmer's son, foreseeing danger to come, collected from all the realms grain with which he filled the granaries, throwing out the residue upon the ramparts. No doubt this rice, warmed with the heat and soaked in the rain, grew up there into plants. I myself once went in by the postern and on some business, and picked up a handful of this rice from a heap on the rampart and dropped it in the street. Whereupon the people laughed at me and cried, 'You're hungry, it seems. Tie up some of it in the corner of your robe, take it home and cook it and eat it.'" Hearing this, the king said to Kevadatta, "Teacher, by cutting off the grain, we shall not take this place. That is not the way." "Then, my lord, we will take it by cutting off the supply of wood which the city gets from without." "So be it, teacher." The bodhisattva, as before, got to know of it, and he built a heap of firewood which showed beyond the rice. The people laughed at the Brahmadatta's man and said, "If you are hungry, here is something to cook your food with," throwing down great logs of wood as they said it. The king asked, "What is the firewood? What is this firewood showing above the rampart?" The scout said, "The farmer's son, foreseeing danger to come, collected firewood and stored it in the sheds behind the houses. What was over, he stacked by the rampart side." Then the king said to Kevadatta, "Teacher, we cannot take the place by cutting off the wood. Enough of that plan." "Never mind, sire, I have another plan." "What is that plan, teacher?" "I see no end to your plans." "Videha, we cannot take. Let us go back to our city." "My lord, if it is said that Julani Brahmadatta with 101 princes could not take Videha, we shall be disgraced. Mahosada is not the only wise man, for I am another. I will use a stratagem."
"What stratagem, teacher?"
"We will have a battle of Dharma."
"What do you mean by that?"
"Sire, no army shall fight. The two sages of the two kings shall appear in one place, and of these, whichever shall salute the other shall be conquered. Mahosada does not know this idea. I am older and he is younger, and when he sees me, he will salute me. Thus we shall conquer Videha, and this done we will return home. So we shall not be disgraced. That is what is meant by a battle of the Dharma. But the Bodhisattva learned this secret as before. "If I let Kevadatta conquer me thus," he thought to himself, "I am no sage." Brahmadatta said, "A capital plan," and he wrote a letter and sent it to Videha by the postern to this effect: "Tomorrow there shall be a battle of the Dharma between these two sages, and he who shall refuse to fight shall be accounted vanquished." On receipt of this, Videha sent for the sage and told him. The sage answered, "Good, my lord, send word to prepare a place for the battle of the Dharma by the western gate, and there to assemble." So he gave a letter to the messenger, and next day they prepared the place for the battle of the Dharma to see the defeat of Kevadatta. But the 101 princes, not knowing what might befall, surrounded Kevadatta to protect him. These princes went to the place prepared and stood looking towards the east, and there also was the sage Kevadatta. But early in the morning the bodhisattva bathed in sweet-scented water and clothed himself in a kasi robe worth 100,000 pieces and adorned himself fully, and after a dainty breakfast went with a great following to the palace gate. Bidden to enter, he did so and greeted the king and sat down on one side. "Well, sage Mahosada," said the king, "I am going to the place of battle."
"And what am I to do?" asked the king.
"My lord, I wish to conquer Kevadatta with a gem. I must have the eight-sided gem."
"Take it, my son."
Mahosada took the gem and took his leave, and surrounded by the 1,000 warriors, his birthmates, he entered the noble chariot, drawn by a team of white thoroughbreds worth 90,000 pieces of gold, and at the time of the midday meal he went to the gate. Kevadatta stood watching for his arrival and saying, "Now he comes, now he comes," craning his neck till it seemed to be lengthened and sweating in the heat of the sun. The great being with his retinue, like an inundating sea, like a roused lion, fearless and unruffled, caused the gate to be open, and came forth from the city, descending from his chariot like a lion aroused. He went forward. The 101 princes, beholding his majesty, acclaimed him with thousands of cries, "Here is the sage Mahosada, son of Siriwata, who hath no peer for wisdom in all India." And he, like Saka, surrounded with his troop of gods, in glory and grandeur unparalleled, holding in his hand the precious gem, stood before Kewata. And Kewata, at first sight of him, had not forced to stand still, but advanced to meet him, and said, "Sage Mahosada, we are both sages, and although I have been dwelling near you all this time, you have never yet sent me so much as a gift. Why is this?" The great being said, "Why, sir, I was looking for a gift which should be not unworthy of you, and today I have found this gem. Pray take it, there is not its like in the world." The other, seeing the gem ablaze in his hand, thought that he must be desiring to offer it, and said, "Give it to me then," holding out his hand. "Take it," said the great being, and dropped it upon the tips of the fingers of his outstretched hand. But the Brahmin could not support the weight of the gem in his fingers, and it slipped down and rolled to the Bodhisattva's feet. The Brahmin, in his greed to get it, stooped down to the other's feet. Then the great being would not let him rise, but with one hand held his shoulder blades and with the other his loins, as he cried, "Rise, teacher, rise! I am younger than you, young enough to be your grandson. Do not obeisance to me." As he said this again and again, he rubbed Kewata's face and forehead against the ground till it was all bloody. Then with the words, "Blind fool, did you think to have an obeisance from me?" he caught him by the throat and threw him away from him. Kewata fell 20 fathoms away, then got up and ran off. Then the great being's men picked up the gem, but the echo of the Bodhisattva's words, "Rise up, rise, do no obeisance to me," rose above the din of the crowd. All the people shouted aloud with one voice, "Brahmin Kewata did obeisance to the sage's feet." And the kings, Brahmadatta and all, saw Kewata bowed before the feet of the great being. "Our sage," they thought, "has done obeisance to the great being. Now we are conquered. He will make an end to all of us." And each mounting his horse, they began to flee away to Uttara Panchala. The Bodhisattva's men, seeing them flee, again made a clamor, crying, "Julani Brahmadatta is in flight with his 101 princes." Hearing this, the princes, terrified more and more, ran on and scattered the great host, while the Bodhisattva's men, shouting and yelling, made a yet louder din. The great being, with his retinue, returned to the city, while Brahmadatta's army ran in rout for 3 leagues. Kewata, mounted upon a horse, came out with the army, wiping up off the blood from his forehead, and cried, "Ho there, do not run, I did not bow to the churl, stop, stop." But the army would not stop, and made mock of Kewata, reviling him, "Man of sin, villain Brahmin, you would make a battle of the Dharma, and then bow before a strapling youth enough to be your grandson. Is not this a thing most unmeet for you?" They would not listen to him, but went on. He dashed on into the army and cried, "Ho, you must believe me. I did not bow to him. He tricked me with a gem." So by one means or another, he convinced the princes and made them believe him and rallied the broken army. Now so great was this host that if each man of them had taken a clod or a handful of earth and thrown it into the moat, they could have filled the moat and made a heap as high as the rampart. But we know that the intentions of the Bodhisattvas are always fulfilled, and there was not one who threw a clod or a handful of earth towards the city. They all returned back to their positions. Then the king asked Kewata, "What are we to do, teacher?" "My lord, let no one come out from the postern and cut off all access. The people unable to come out will be discouraged and will open the gate. Thus we shall capture our enemies." The sage was informed as before of the matter and thought, "If they stay here long, we shall have no peace. A way must be found to get rid of them. I will devise a stratagem and make them go." So he searched for a man clever in such things and found one named Anukewata. To him he said, "Teacher, I have a thing which I want you to carry out." "What am I to do, wise sir? Tell me," the man replied. "Stand on the rampart, and when you see our men incautious, immediately let down cakes, fish, meat, and other food to Brahmadatta's men, and say, 'Here, eat this and this. Don't be downhearted. Try to stay here a few days longer. Before long, the people will be like hens in a coop and will open the gates of themselves, and then you will be able to capture Videha and that villain of a farmer's son. Our men, when they hear this, with harsh upbraiding will bind you, will bind you hand and foot in the sight of Brahmadatta's army, and will pretend to beat you with bamboos and pull you down, and tying your hair in 5 knots will daub you with brick dust, put a garland of kanavera upon you, belabor you soundly until wheels rise on your back, take you up on the rampart, tie you up, and let you down by a rope to Brahmadatta's men, crying out, "Go, traitor!" Then you will be taken before Brahmadatta, and he will ask your offense. You must say to him, "Great king, once I was held in great honor, but the farmer's son denouncing me to the king, to my king for a traitor, and robbed me of all. I wish to make the man shorter by a head who had ruined me, and in pity for the despondency of your men, I gave them food and drink. For that, with the old grudge in his heart, he brought this destruction upon me. Your own men, O king, know all about it. Thus, by one means or another, you must win the king's confidence, and then say to him, 'Sire, now you have me, trouble no more. Now Videha and the farmer's son are dead men. I know the strong places and the weak places of the ramparts in this city. I know where crocodiles are in the moats and where they are not. Before long I will bring the city into your hands. The king will believe you and do you honor and place the army in your charge. Then you must bring down the army into the places infested by snakes and crocodiles. The army, in fear of the crocodiles, will refuse to go down. You must then say to the king, 'Your army, O Lord, has been corrupted by the farmer's son. There is not a man of them, not even the teacher Kewata and the princes, who has not been bribed. They just walk about guarding you. They are all the creatures of the farmer's son, and I alone am your man. If you do not believe me, order the kings to come before you in full dress. Then examine their dresses, their ornaments, their swords, all given them by the farmer's son and inscribed with his names, with his name, and assure yourself. He will do so and make sure, in fear will dismiss the princes. Then he will ask you what is to be done, and you must reply, 'My lord, the farmer's son is full of resources, and if you stay here a few days, he will gain over all the army and capture yourself. Make no delay, but this very night, in the middle watch, let us take horse and depart, that we die not in the enemy's hand. He will follow your advice, and while he flees away, you must return and tell my people.' Thereupon, Anukewata replied, 'Good, wise sir, I will do your bidding.' 'Well, then, you must put up with a few blows.' Anukewata replied, 'Wise sir, do what you will with my body, only spare my life and my limbs.' Then, after showing all respect to Kewata's family, he caused him to be roughly handled in this manner and handed him over to Brahmadatta's men. The king tested him and trusted him, honored him, and gave him charge of the army. He brought the army down to the places which were infested by snakes and crocodiles, and the men, terrified by the crocodiles and wounded by arrows, spears, and lances cast by soldiers who stood upon the battlements, thus perished, after which none were so brave as to approach. Then Anukewata approached the king and said to him, 'O great king, there is not a man to fight for you. All have been bribed. If you do not believe me, send for the princes and see the inscriptions upon their garments and accoutrements.' This the king did, and seeing inscriptions upon their garments and accoutrements, he felt sure that indeed these had taken bribes. 'Teacher,' he said, 'what's to be done now?' 'My lord, there's nothing to be done. If you delay, the farmer's son will capture you.' 'Sire, if the teacher Kewata does walk about with a sore on his forehead, yet he also has taken his bribes. He accepted that precious gem and made you run en route for 3 leagues, and then won your confidence again and made you return. He is a traitor. I would not obey him a single night. This very night, in the middle watch, you should escape. You have not a friend but me.' 'Then, teacher, get my horse and chariot ready.' Finding that the king was assuredly bent on escape, he encouraged him and bade him fear nothing. Then he went out and told the scouts that the king was to escape that night. Let them not think of sleep. He next prepared the king's horses, arranged the reins so that the more he pulled, the faster the horse would go, and at midnight he said, 'My lord, your horse is ready. See, it is time.' The king mounted the horse and fled. Anukewata also got on horseback as though to go with him, but after going a little way he turned back, and the king's horse, by the arrangement of its reins, pulled as the king would, went on. Then Anukewata came amongst the army and shouted with a loud voice, 'Julani Brahmadatta has fled!' The scouts and their attendants cried too. The other princes, hearing the noise, thought in their terror, 'Sage Mahosada must have opened the gate and come out. We shall all be dead men.' Giving but a look at all the materials of their use and enjoyment, away they ran. The men shouted the louder, "The princes are en route!" Hearing the noise, all the others who stood at the gate and on the tower shouted aloud and clapped their hands. Then the whole city, within and without, was one great roar, as though the earth cleft asunder, or the great deep was broken up, whilst the innumerable myriads of that mighty host in mortal terror, without refuge or defence, cried aloud, "Brahmadatta is taken by Mahosada with 101 kings." Away they ran in rout, throwing down even their waistcloths. The camp was empty. Julani Brahmadatta entered his own city with 101 chiefs. And I'll stop there. And thanks for listening. Some of you actually made it to the end.